International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Last week there was something that we were unable to do on the program, and that's only because by the time the program had been recorded, the story had actually come in. And that's the death of the Fox News chief, the former Fox News chief, Roger Ailes. He died at the age of 77. Now, many people, of course, have credited him as being the founding member and the driving force behind Fox News. He resigned in 2016 following a sexual harassment allegation. Jay Rosen is a teacher of journalism at the University of New York. He speaks next to Jonathan Green.
How should we remember Mr. Ailes?
Well, he is an enormously influential figure in politics, media, and public culture in the United States, who probably did more to bring us to the very desperate situation we're in right now than anybody else.
Can we pick through that, and perhaps by imagining the media universe pre-Fox, I mean, the things that changed with the arrival of Fox News and the way in which it went about its journalism, its broadcasting?
Well, he eliminated the cool, professional, neutral style of broadcasting and replaced it with a hot, emotional, savage, attacking style of broadcasting. And that led to an attack style in politics that also entertained conservative viewers in a way that was fairly addictive for a lot of them. And then eventually what happened is that portion of the public, that portion of the electorate, began to break off from the rest of the public and always get its news either through Fox News or through its imitators. And that's the situation we're in today.
Was the intention initially of the way in which Fox News went about its broadcasting, was the intention to create political influence or simply to entertain as broadcasters? I mean, what was driving that?
Well, I think when we think of Ailes as a visionary, part of his vision was he didn't make those distinctions, that the entertainment language he used, the hot emotionalism that he programmed into his TV, along with the attractive blondes and mini skirts that all the women had, were of a piece with the kind of politics that Fox practiced and that he had influence over within the conservative coalition. So I think he saw the political uses of entertainment, and he saw how entertainment could be a wedge within politics. You know, the logo for Fox News to this day is an echo of Hollywood. It's searchlights at sort of a Hollywood premiere, you know? That's still there if you look at the iconography of Fox News. But Ailes' background was in politics. He was a political operative. And so his skill and his insight straddled those two worlds, and his vision was of a hybrid form.
This, of course, was a co-production with Rupert Murdoch, the owner of the network. How closely did the two align in their thinking on this?
Well, I think they were very close in the sense that Murdoch wanted influence. That's the model that he's followed in Australia, in the UK, putting together these empires that gain their power partly because they have political might. And so Fox News followed that formula. But Ailes, I think, understood that he could dominate the conservative movement in the United States. And I think whereas Murdoch was more of an empire builder, Ailes' talent was equally for destroying rivals and demolishing critics.
And the influence was, well, it began to change not only journalistic culture, but political culture, I suspect. I mean, the way in which politics began to be practiced is influenced by the way in which Fox practiced journalism.
Yes, because part of the argument of Fox from News Channel from the beginning was not just here's a conservative take on the news, but all the rest of the media is lying to you. And beyond that, all the elites in the culture, not just in media, but in government and in academia and in science, in education, in unions, all of them are part of the same complex that wants to deny you your rights and kind of undermine your politics. And this constant message had its effect. So the sort of the most comic version of it is Bill O'Reilly and Fox invented a war on Christmas in the United States in which they tried to convince their audience that the elites in the United States were hostile to the holiday of Christmas. And there was almost no basis for it. It was almost a self-parody, but that's the kind of strategy that they followed. And if you have a style in which grievance against elites is your programming strategy, that extends from media into politics, into culture, it becomes an entire program.
You mentioned Bill O'Reilly there, of course, hounded off air after allegations of sexual, well, predation, I guess, misconduct. And the same happened to Roger Ailes, leaving Fox with those, hounded out by those allegations. Did those allegations of harassment undermine his influence?
Well, they were part and parcel of the way that he ran his empire. I mean, that's how he operated. He operated through intimidation, by using people, by frightening them into submission, by showing his power over them. And O'Reilly took a page from Ailes. And so it's not like these were wholly different discoveries. I mean, this is part of the same style. It's in the same fabric. So, yeah, eventually they lost their positions because the public fallout from the sexual harassment allegations was too much for the corporation, the Murdochs, to bear. But if it hadn't been for the public exposure of those charges, the mere knowledge that Ailes was a serial sexual harasser or that O'Reilly was in the same cloth, that wouldn't have bothered Murdoch. I mean, he would have gone on with them if the public cost hadn't been too high.
To what extent do we now have a Fox News administration in the United States? That same sense of a constructed reality, that same sense of such a highly partisan politics, are they both cut from that same cloth, the presidency, the network?
Oh, I don't think you could have Donald Trump without Fox News, without Roger Ailes. It's not just highly partisan. That's understating it. It's a highly partisan discourse that is broken off and detached from the rest of the culture and creates its own loop. I've also tried to describe it as part of it as verification in reverse. Verification is when you take something that might be true and you nail it down. Verification in reverse is when you take things that have been nailed down and you introduce doubt about them. And introducing doubt releases a lot of energy, controversy, furor, charge, countercharge. And then you can power a political movement with that energy. So that's very basic to how Fox News operates, and it is completely fundamental to how Donald Trump began his political career.
So Roger Ailes gone, the future for Fox News?
Well, it still has its audience. It still has stars. It still has a kind of monopoly on the cable dial, at least. It's possible that we could see challengers to Fox News to come and try and pick off some of its audience. But right now, it's still in a very powerful position. And of course, it still has Rupert Murdoch with his billions and with his support. So it's still in a very strong position.
Jay Rosen, thanks so much for your time.
You are so welcome, Jonathan.
Jay Rosen, a professor of journalism at New York University, speaking there with Jonathan Green. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, which is PDF total journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
What is the future of journalism in Australia? And what will happen when the parliamentary inquiry opens into the major challenges facing the media in Australia? The committee will examine a range of topics dominating the media landscape, including clickbait, fake news, and the market power of internet giants such as Google and Facebook. The inquiry is timely, with Fairfax in the process of retrenching another 115 editorial staff, and News Limited confirming plans to sack up to 70 photojournalists. For more on this, Alison Carabini. He's a Labour senator and chairman of the Senate Committee on the Future of Public Interest Journalism.
Your committee will be examining the future of public interest journalism in this country. Now, considering the quite incredible transformation of the media landscape in recent years, do you have your doubts that quality journalism does have a future in Australia?
I have my doubts that if we don't actually start doing something about it, if the government doesn't play a role, if the public doesn't start playing a role, that there will be no long-term future for the type of journalism that I think Australian public want and expect. We don't want a situation where all we're left with is public broadcasters, no offence, but also making sure that we have a proper, viable and vibrant private media market as well.
Well, that takes us straight to Fairfax. The Fairfax chief executive, Greg Highwood, will front up today. He's in the process of shrinking the Fairfax mastheads yet again. What do you want to hear from him?
I'm very concerned that what they're looking at doing, on one level, there's the 125 job cuts, which have obviously been discussed. There's been a strike. I think your listeners will be well aware of that. On top of that, I think there's real concerns about this potential sale to TPG. What guarantees are being put in place to make sure that the publications would exist beyond that, and also making sure that, you know, we don't have a situation where Fairfax as a stable ends up becoming, you know, torn apart and really just the shell of a media company. I think that is a bad national outcome.
But this private equity firm, TPG, has upped its bid for Fairfax. It's now proposing to buy out the entire firm. Does that not give you some confidence that the company wouldn't be torn up?
No, it doesn't at all. And my real worry is this. You know, if TPG are to purchase Fairfax, they would have to go through the Foreign Investment Review Board process. I'd want to have a discussion, certainly with the Treasurer and others as part of this process, to see what controls and restrictions we would be placing on that kind of a sale, under the question of what is the national interest. We've done it before with big kind of sales like big land sales and other matters. We've put controls on the purchasing bid. I believe that's the discussion we want to have. You know, there is so much national interest in the protection of journalism. And frankly, we are struggling at the moment where there isn't a viable financial model that has really been working to the extent to which that we need it to.
But let's go to the controls that you would like to see if indeed Fairfax is sold to TPG. Would the big one be guaranteeing some level of journalistic independence?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. And beyond that as well, just some guarantees around what was going to be happening with you've got the mastheads of obviously the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age and others. Look, these are part of Australian identity. I mean, as a Sydney-sider myself, the Sydney Morning Herald is a treasure. And I believe that we have a responsibility to do what we can to protect it.
So you wouldn't see journalists working, well, you would see rather journalists working for a foreign-owned private equity firm as a major concern. That raises red flags for journalistic independence in this country.
In my opinion, it certainly does. But don't forget, under the FIRB process, the Foreign Investment Review Board process, the Treasurer under the National Interest Test is well within his power to place controls around that. I don't think they're controls that can't be satisfied. But again, what we don't want is for, I don't believe it's in the national interest, for Fairfax to be torn apart, effectively become a property company, which is Domain, which I think has been valued at about $2.2 billion at the moment, and the journalism component of it, which has been so important to the national debate, be torn apart. But it's not just about Fairfax. I mean, you move beyond that. It's about the future of journalism itself. And the question here is, what is the role of government within all of this? Is there a role for government? How does government support the industry? How does government support journalism?
Okay, so you want to see government playing a role here, but how much government interference should there be in the media market before you start eroding freedom of speech, freedom of the media and so forth? How tightly regulated do you want to see the market?
And that is the real question. I think what we can't do as a government is set the settings and let the companies run themselves. I'll give you a quick example. You look at Google. If I purchase an ad from Google, I'm actually purchasing the ad in Singapore. They're not paying Australian taxes. They're not filing in Australia. If I'm going to, say, news.com.au or sydneymorningherald.com.au, obviously the main News Corp site and the main Fairfax site, they are Australian-listed companies. If I'm advertising with them, they're paying Australian taxes. Now, you start by saying, well, why is there an unfair playing field where with Google, on one hand, are getting able to discount their prices simply because they're not paying Australian taxes, and yet you've got Fairfax and News who are producing content in the Australian media environment who are disadvantaged for being registered in Australia. I mean, the system itself is wrong. Beyond that, we have to look at what other settings, what tax incentives, what other kinds of incentives do we look at to create a viable media environment without actually getting involved in the journalism. The balance, Alison, is between getting the settings right where these companies can thrive and survive without getting the interference or the government interference in the actual journalism, which I'm sure none of your listeners would want.
But won't it always be the case that regardless of whether or not the government can finally manage to get these internet giants to pay their proper share of tax, advertising will always be cheaper on the internet than it is in traditional media outlets like newspapers, television and so forth. So aren't advertisers always going to migrate towards the internet? It's just the economics of the marketplace.
Look, the market is certainly changing, but you can at least level up some of the playing field. I mean, again, you look at the Sydney Morning Herald website or the news.com.au website, they do advertising as well. Now, is that a model that is as lucrative as it was the old kind of print ad model or even the TV ad model? No, that's certainly changing. The question also becomes then, do we need to or should we as a society be providing other incentives to make sure we have proper public interest journalism? I know that some of the organisations, be it The Guardian and others, have been very strongly advocating that they'd like trust donations to the media, like they have in America, to actually have a tax-deductible status, the kind of situation you have with the Pew Institute and other things in the US, to actually be able to support public interest journalism. These are huge questions, and the consequences of this are going to be significant for our society.
Another big issue facing the media is fake news. Sam Dastyari, your committee will be taking a look at fake news, and we saw it really flourish overseas during last year's presidential election. But is it really a problem in this country?
Okay. And it's not just a problem. We believe it will become a problem. I mean, right now there's the British elections going on, obviously, in the UK. Right now, the stories that are coming out from there are of interference. We know there were stories coming out of the French election from interference.
Okay, how do you stop it? What do you do?
I think this is the debate we need to have. A large part of it, and again, I think the security agencies, I think, have been really strong and fantastic in this space, is about public awareness. What we saw in the French elections was a much more aware public. public than they were, say, in the American elections, and they were able to respond to that. But let's just define what fake news is. Fake news isn't someone who gives an opinion who's wrong. Fake news is the deliberate spreading of misinformation, either for financial gain or, in the case of elections, for nefarious processes. There appears to be an attempt, in the American case, they pointed the finger at the Russians. I can't speak for France or other places, where there are those who are trying to undermine the act of democracy. It's not really about supporting one candidate or another. It appears to be more about just throwing the democratic systems into disrepute and into doubt. And we have to prepare ourselves for that. We didn't, I don't believe, had it at the last federal election, but we'd be naive to think that it's not going to be there in the future.
Well, Sam Dastyari, we do have to wrap this up. Finally, there has been some criticism that you will be able to haul individual journalists before your inquiry. Will you be tempted to do so, especially if they have been propagating fake news? And we've only got about 20 seconds.
Look, that's certainly not the path, but my experience has been that the difficulty normally is getting the journalists away from the camera, not towards them.
That was the Labour Senator and Chairman of the Senate Committee on the Future of Public Interest Journalism. He was speaking there with the ABC's Alison Carbini. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Now, I just want to take a moment to tell you about something that we actually have coming up very soon. And that is, as you're probably aware, we have a Patreon page for the Happy Station Show, where we've been bringing you some very rare Happy Station shows, as well as other Radio Netherlands productions. To show gratitude for all those who have become patrons, we're going to be producing a special two-hour program, and we want your input. All you need to do is to become a patron. Go to www.patreon.com/PCJ Radio. And if you become a patron at like $3, you will be able to access a whole slew of very rare Radio Netherlands and Happy Station content, many of which has not been heard since it was originally broadcast, including material that was recorded but actually never broadcast because they ran out of time when they were actually producing the program. So go check it out, patreon.com/PCJ Radio. Now, what's been happening propagation-wise, and what can we expect? Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from Space Weather Service Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through May 27th. Fair to normal at low latitudes. Fair to poor to normal to fair at middle latitudes. Poor to fair at high latitudes. From the Space Environment Prediction Center of China, the planetary ANX is predicted to rise to 13 on June 7th. 16 on June 13th. Solar flux declining gradually from a peak of 81 on May 26th. From Space Weather South Africa through May 27th, magnetic conditions quiet, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, a partial coronal mass ejection is likely to arrive at Earth in the second half of May 26th, leading to unsettled to active geomagnetic conditions. A chance of G1 minor storm periods persisting into May 27th. From FK Yanda OK1HH of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettled until May 28th, also June 5th, 6th, and 10th. Mostly quiet on May 29th, June 4th, 9th, and 12th. Active to disturbed on May 30th, 31st, June 2nd, and 14th. Quiet on June 1st and 8th. Quiet to active on June 3rd, 7th, 11th, and 13th. From SWPC in Boulder, quiet conditions are likely to prevail from May 25th to June 9th under a nominal solar wind regime with ANK indices of only 5 and 2. An increase to active conditions is likely on June 11th and 12th, peaking at 12 and 4. G1 minor storms June 16th at 20 and 5. Solar flux dropping from 76 on May 27th to 70 from June 4th to 8th. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF, microwave DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting across the Gulf of Mexico May 26th to 29th, and at least until May 30th along the west coast of Mexico. Also May 27th around eastern Cuba. All week off the west coast of Africa around Cabo Verde. Off the coast of Angola, extending to Namibia by May 29th. Continuing across all the seas around the Arabian Peninsula and as far as India. Also the east coast of India, May 28th and 29th.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. And actually, well, that's it. We've run out of time. Funny, actually, usually we have enough material to fill in like 45 minutes, but actually today we're under by quite a bit. I think that's because something that we actually had scheduled eventually didn't happen at the last moment. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. We'll see you in 7 days, 73 and 88 to the ladies.